from Mont Saint-Michel. Welcome to the GCN show.
Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, is your bike too good for you? Dan has been out riding again and decided that modern bikes might be more dangerous in the wrong hands. Find out why and why I disagree.
Plus, the rider who beat 150,000 others on a Strava segment, the online website selling used cycling shorts, and the country that's investing 2 billion euros into getting people onto bikes.
Plus, a story from Dan about how he cheated in an international bike race back in the day.
This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that Pauline Ferrand-Prevot is the new Queen of France.
It's quite a shift for La République, isn't it? But no, she should be. She won the final two stages of the Tour de France Femme avec Zwift, plus the yellow jersey.
Yeah, by quite the margin in the end as well, wasn't it? The only thing I think she's yet to win in the world of cycling are the Artistic Cycling World Championships.
Pretty much. I mean, just give her time, Dan.
Well, true,
give her time.
Yeah.
Now, this year's tour may also have marked a shift in power in women's cycling. So the French had twice as many riders in the top 10 overall and more stage wins than the Dutch. Mm. The all-conquering Dutch.
I think it's time for the French men to step up at the men's Tour de France, isn't it? We also learned this week that the Box Hill Strava segment has been beaten again.
Yeah, now to remind you, this is one of the most popular Strava segments in the world. Back before it got popular, Dan actually held the record.
Whoa. I mean, it was already popular, I would say, back in 2011.
I mean, it's debatable. And you were in a race sat on Mark Cavendish's wheel.
I was, yeah. That was my job.
Yeah, and I was on your wheel. I just didn't put it on Strava. Yeah,
therefore, it didn't happen, Si.
Anyway, congratulations to Dylan Hicks and his team at Raptor Factory Racing. So he took 3 seconds off the record, which is no mean feat, actually. That was set by Dom Jackson last September, and he averaged 34.2k an hour. Mm. And it means that Dan here is now down to 30th.
Yep, 30th out of 150,000 people that have ridden up there, Si.
You weren't even on the front.
No. Anyway, we'll give more details about that KOM later because there was a lot of prep that went into that effort.
Yeah, now finally this week we learnt that Dan thinks that modern bikes are dangerous.
That's not exactly what I said to you earlier.
Okay, go on then. Spin your yarn.
You what?
Tell us your story.
Okay. Well, we've touched on the subject of whether bikes can be too good for people before, I think.
We have, yeah. The idea, in some quarters at least, that you kind of need to pay your dues, don't you, before you're allowed to get a super nice or a super fast or a super light bike.
Yeah, exactly that. Maybe we'll come on to that in a moment, but I had a bit of a realisation when I was riding at the weekend.
Okay.
So on Sunday, I went out for a road ride and I did 4x4 minutes at VO2 max, if anyone's interested.
Yeah, old Norwegian 4x4s.
Those are the ones, yeah. They made me feel sick. And the most depressing thing, actually, was that the power I was putting out during the four-minute efforts was less than what I used to do when I was doing sweet spot efforts for 45 minutes at a time back in the day. Anyway, that's not my story or my yarn.
Okay, but you are really spinning it out here. So, should we press the chase?
Okay, yeah, all right. So, my observation was about initially speed versus power. So, I kind of need to decouple my own perception of the power I'm doing for a certain speed because for years of riding with a power meter and obviously knowing what speed I'm doing, I feel like I've got a sense of how much power I'm doing at a certain speed. But my new road bike is just so fast compared to what I used to train on. My power is nowhere near as high as I'm expecting it to be for a given speed on a flat road.
Cool story, bro.
Yeah, I haven't quite finished yet.
Okay, all right.
Let me continue yarning.
That was just a dramatic pause,
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, it was. It.
All right.
Anyway, what I was thinking about when I had enough blood going to my brain between intervals was that bikes now are so fast that they could be dangerous when ridden by people who have a lot of power, but maybe without the skills.
So riders without your immense level of experience and bike handling skills.
Yeah, exactly that.
Okay, right.
Not quite. I'm just joking a little bit on that point. But there are definitely points where I'm thinking to myself, this just feels ridiculously fast. And if anything runs out into me, bearing in mind I'm riding around the New Forest and there's lots of wild animals that are free to roam, I might not be able to stop in time or take aversive action. Now, before you jump in, just here, Si, I know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
There is a distinct chance that I am getting more risk aware with slower reaction times as I'm getting older. But you know what I mean? I think. If somebody gets really fit, let's say, on an indoor trainer, and then jumps on a modern era road bike out on the open road, they're going to be going really bloody fast.
I mean, you are getting older, Dan. I mean, to a certain extent, I do know what you mean.
But,
I mean, I feel like your case is quite a unique one, isn't it? So you do have a lot of experience of riding. And then there's this period of like a decade or so that's sort of lost in the ether, isn't it? From a cycling point of view, anyway. Yeah. And so you've gone from what? Your Cervelo with box section Mavic Caseriums and slow tyres and a baggier jersey.
Yeah, the training jerseys were baggier, actually.
Yeah, to a state-of-the-art bike with super fast tyres.
I think that just about sums the timeline up, yeah.
Yeah, whereas for a lot of people, myself included, these changes have been incremental over time, haven't they? So I can imagine being a little bit like watching yourself age. You don't see much of a difference because of mirrors and you kind of see yourself every day. But if someone hadn't seen you for a decade, they'd see a big difference, wouldn't
they? I don't know what you mean.
Well, I mean, we can illustrate it right now.
The world of cycling is just about to get a hell of a lot less complicated. No, I still don't know what you mean. So
no?
They look exactly the same.
Yeah. Okay. Well, regardless, in cycling, things have moved on significantly over the decade, right? So essentially, I'm not surprised that you are struggling to equate your speed to your power.
To be honest, I keep looking down and genuinely thinking that my power meter must be under-reading.
I mean, I think everyone thinks that, don't they, really? And that will never change. But yeah, so modern bikes are significantly faster. Mm. Agree completely. But to say that they're dangerous in the wrong hands is something that I don't agree with. I mean, firstly, how much faster are we actually talking here? 3K an hour?
Probably about that. Yeah, maybe more in certain situations.
Yeah, okay, so 3K an hour. Is that actually enough to make a meaningful difference if a deer jumps out at you? Okay, so sadly, no online tool seems to exist to calculate stopping distance when cycling. I did look, but I popped that into one that measures stopping distances from cars. So even with that added mass of a car, all that extra inertia, the difference in stopping distance between 35k an hour and 32k an hour is 2 metres.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like much. Although it might be the difference between hitting a cow and not hitting a cow,
I mean, it might be the difference between not hitting a cow and then hitting it so slowly that actually you're basically giving it a cuddle.
Well, you wouldn't want to do that either.
I mean, I definitely would not want to cuddle a cow. No, but you take my point, right? Yeah. And then if you add in that on these super fast, dangerous modern bikes that we have, we're likely to be using wider tyres. Yeah, so with more grip. And then we've got better brakes, almost undoubtedly. Although some people will like to debate that in the comment section. So you could argue quite fairly, I think, that modern bikes, whilst being faster, are also safer.
I take on board your points, but what about downhills?
What do you mean?
Well, on the flat, it might be that sort of 3 to 5k per hour difference, but downhill, it could be 10k's an hour plus. Is that not more dangerous? Sorry?
Well, it could be a little bit more dangerous, I suppose, if you're going 15k an hour faster. But I do think that most people's top speeds are not limited by aerodynamics and gravity.
Or rolling resistance.
But I think they're probably restricted by confidence, aren't they? When you stop pedalling and when you pop your brakes on. So I stand by it. Modern bikes are not more dangerous. I think the opposite is true. And so there is no justification for saying that a bike is too good for someone. I don't think. It might not be appreciated as much. It might not be used to its capacity. But I'm okay with anyone buying whatever bike that A, makes them happy, or B, crucially, that they can afford.
Yeah. Or makes them faster.
Yeah. I mean, do you think, honestly, people can get into trouble because they're aero bikes?
It's generally something I was thinking about. I think my reaction times probably are slower. So I'm thinking, crikey, I feel like I'm really rattling along here. But that said, when I get to 40k's per hour now, it feels genuinely quite fast, to the point where I can't believe they averaged almost 43 for the entire Tour de France this year. I'm pretty sure back in the day, I'd have been riding at 40k's per hour and it wouldn't have felt as fast.
The Tour de France that you did, you probably averaged 41k an hour, didn't you?
I think it was 39 point something.
Oh, it was an easy year that year.
There was a lot of climbing.
and a headwind as well.
Yeah, most of the way around France, yeah. Anyway, let us know what you think. Have any of you been in the same situation as me where you've lost a decade into the ether, as Si described it earlier, and you can't believe the difference when you get on a bike now? Or are you like Si, and you've been incrementally upgrading over the years and you feel perfectly confident on your new bike?
Yeah, fundamentally, do you think that modern bikes are dangerous?
Settle the argument in the comment section below.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Cycling shorts now, and we're going to start with the news that you can buy cycling shorts that were used in the Tour de France and by none other than Ben Healy.
For someone with the right fetish side, this could be a great opportunity.
Yeah.
Although perhaps the bigger draw is the jersey that's attached to the shorts and the numbers as well.
Yes, I suspect that whoever buys Ben's skin suit from stage 21 of the Tour de France would not be wearing it, but will hopefully be framing it instead. And actually, if you don't want Ben's skin suits, there are lots on match-worn shirt. There is, I noticed, a Remco Evenepoel white jersey from before he quit the race. Geraint Thomas's helmet is on there, yeah. And as we film this, Dylan Groenewegen's skin suit is also on there with just one bid. So it's going for the princely sum of a quid.
Oh, crikey, what a bargain.
Absolute bargain.
Well, this is where we get to see how influential we really are today. Might go up to €2. I mean, that's all slightly gross, I think, isn't it? But I'd also say undeniably quite a cool story.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, buying a skin suit for a quid, like, you could presumably wash that so that it's, you know, not too gross.
And then put it on eBay, yeah.
Well, unless you want a super fast Jayco Alula skin suit. That's probably the cheapest map kit you'll get this year, isn't it?
I'd have thought so.
Anyway, there we go. Next up, France is looking at a big overhaul of cycling in that country. And we do not mean how to make more Pauline Perron-Prévost,
no,
do we?
No, we don't mean that, no. This preceded the success, actually, of her in the Tour de France. And in fact, it's a government strategy that was created in 2023. But Bicycle Retailer reported last week that the next step of the National Mobility Plan is starting to take shape.
Yeah, so this is a €2 billion investment. And it is into both getting more people on bikes, so like improving cycling infrastructure and stuff, but also, I thought interestingly, increasing the production of bikes in France to try and boost jobs and then meet the demand for new bikes with domestic brands like they had in the 80s and the 90s.
Mm. Part of that will come according to the article from the Support for R&D. So now it could be a really interesting time either for existing brands or indeed for any new ones that pop up.
Bonkers, isn't it, really, to think that the French government could be supporting, like, research into aerodynamics?
Yeah, I mean, €2 billion, it's quite the investment, isn't it? Chapeau.
Probably more into, like, electric bikes and cargo bikes and stuff. But, you know, potentially, a Mavic might get in there.
So I reckon if they did plough €2 billion into aerodynamic research, that a Frenchman might get on the podium in the Tour de France.
Imagine what they would look like. Imagine what the helmet would be. Do you know, I don't want to think. I don't want to think. Anyway, we promised more details on the Box Hill Strava segment. So, well, here it is. And it is actually a cool story, unlike Dan's from earlier on in the episode.
So Raptor Factory Racing is basically part of a new British structure that's focused on helping riders who are just below World Tour level, which is really badly needed in the UK right now because the domestic scene's been really suffering. So along with the racing, they decided to give that climb a shot. After much planning, they went down last Tuesday, so about a week ago, to do a recce, and then started their attempt first thing on Wednesday before it got too busy on the road, because it is a busy road, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
They then started with a 5-rider tray and then got another rider to join midway up the first drag.
Oof. Now, unfortunately, they fell short of the record, didn't they? But eventually decided to change the strategy a bit and give it another go. And lo and behold, it worked. So Hicks averaged the same power, which was 7.5 watts per kilo. It does sound like quite a lot, doesn't it?
It's for me, it's 550 watts, I worked out.
For how many minutes was it? 3 minutes?
4.02.
It's quite a lot. It's quite a lot, isn't it? Anyway, he went 7 seconds faster for the same average power with a change in strategy. So that was enough to take the record.
The first thing that goes through my head when I hear this, Si, is that their KOM attempt must have been far better organised than Ollie's was with Andrew Feather on Outdo It. I mean, I bet they checked the climb first to make sure there weren't any markets going on that day.
No, if you've got no idea what we're talking about, then stick around to the end of the show. But anyway, well done to Dylan and the team. Pretty cool to top the leaderboard of a segment done over 150,000 times and beat Dan as well. Can you remember what your average power was?
I'm not sure, no. I did do a test in training up there where I averaged 470 watts for like 5.5 minutes or something. So obviously quite a lot slower.
Those bikes back then, they were so much slower, mate.
Yeah. I was pushing to win myself, obviously, rather than cheating in a race.
One of those rare moments. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on, you might remember that Canyon launched their customization program earlier this year to those in the USA, and it's now available in the rest of the world as well as the USA.
Yeah, so Alex was out in Munich at the launch last week, meeting the designers and also some of the artists responsible for the amazing paint schemes that are available. And in fact, a bike has just arrived at GCN Megabase, destined for...
For me, I expect.
No, mate. Yeah. Dr. Bridgewood. Surprise, surprise. Anyway, as well as the gorgeous paint options, you can also customise your cockpit dimensions of your custom Canyon, saddle choice, and also wheels as well.
Mm. I'd imagine mine is probably in the post by this
point. Well, it's aeroed only at the moment, and you are too old for that now, aren't you?
That does sound
45
dangerous.
45 next week, maybe?
Yeah, on Monday. Happy birthday wishes, very welcome. I mean, I can still ride aero bikes, I would say.
Yeah, they're just really dangerous.
Yeah, in the wrong hands, All right, we'll finish Cycling Short with the story that was picked up by Cycling News of two Dutch riders at the Tour de Guadeloupe, shall I say, because they were disqualified there. Apparently, they were caught sneaking back into the peloton after being dropped near the start, inside the last 40Ks of the stay, they got back in.
So the two riders, both from the RC Jan van Arkel team, had apparently been distanced, yeah, as Dan said, earlier in the stage, but then took a shortcut, hid behind some cars on the road before rejoining the peloton.
Unfortunately, somebody was videoing from one of the cars.
They were caught.
I've done pretty much exactly the same thing.
What?
Back in the day, yeah. I'm going to spin a yarn.
Go on then. Story time with Dan.
This is my first ever race outside of the UK.
Okay.
It was one of my first ever road races, actually. So I'd gone on a training camp.
What year are we talking? How far back are we going?
98, I reckon.
Okay.
Early 98. And I'd go out on a training camp organised by Barry Clark at Bournemouth Arrow. And there was the Army Cycling Union there. I met a couple of good mates that I'd known for years. Anyway, they decided there was this race on that we'd drive out to the race and compete. It was about 120Ks. Had a Kelme rider in there. Remember Kelme team?
Yeah,
so it felt proper. Yeah. Like I was against a pro.
Yeah.
Anyway, about 15 kilometres in, we're going down a really fast, gradual descent, pedalling, and my chain gets locked between the 11 sprocket and the Rally Dynatec frame that I had at the time. I don't think it was Dynatec, actually. It was 853 tubing. I couldn't pedal it out. I got off the bike. I couldn't even yank it out. I hadn't been going to the gym back then. So I was there on the side of the road for so long that the entire convoy, the ambulance at the end, they all just went past. And it was days before GPS, of course. I had no idea where I was. So I sort of just aimlessly rode my bike for a while. And then another guy that had been in the race, a local, came past me and sort of, we didn't speak the same language. He said, follow me. So I followed him for a good 20 minutes or so. And then he said, right, let's stop here. So we stopped and I thought, what's going on? 5 minutes later, the peloton came through with the lead car and stuff. I was like, right, now go. So we sort of jumped back into the peloton. But to be honest, all I wanted to do, I had no idea where I was. I just wanted to find out how to get back to the finish again because I hadn't even noted down what the name of the starter town was.
Honest, Governor, I was just trying to get to the finish. And I tried to give back third place prize money, but they just wouldn't have it.
No, I finished right towards the back. I might have even got dropped towards the end despite being fresher than everybody else.
Wow. I mean, I feel like the GCN viewers need to be judge and jury. Is Dan...
What's your opinion?
...admitting to cheating? Well... So, I mean, black and white, yeah, you cheated, but yeah. I can imagine the context.
Yeah, thanks.
You know, back in the day, before GPS mobile phones, I think I might have said this before, a teammate of mine back in the mountain bike days was doing a French amateur road race, Circuit de Mine, remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And he got lost because he was stuck between groups. He ended up in Luxembourg with no ability to speak like any language, didn't know where he'd started, where he was supposed to finish. All he knew was the name of the race that he was doing. And my manager at the time just opened up the broom wagon and was like, well, where is he? Like, he just completely vanished off the face of the earth. Eventually, Phil Spencer found a police station and they understood what he meant by repeating Circuit de Mine. Right. And they phoned up the race organisers. Anyway, so I can see that, you know, that might have been in different circumstances. But anyway.
Do you think we're showing our age at all, Si, with these stories?
Well, I mean, you definitely are with that story. But yeah.
It is now time for Hack. /Bodge of the Week. If you'd like to get involved in this part of the show, just go to globalcyclingnetwork.com/Uploader. First up this week, one that was sent in by Sam Voisin. My friend's rear derailleur cable snapped on a 100-mile ride. His chain was stuck in the hardest gear on the cassette. It was starting to look like he wouldn't be able to finish this ride at the top of the mountain because we could only get the derailleur to the middle cog using the limit screw. Just as we were about to give up, I was struck by some hack forward slash bodge inspiration. I wedged a tyre lever under the derailleur so it extended enough to get the chain onto the biggest cog. Didn't have any zip ties, but I did have a Garmin speed sensor. I used that speed sensor as an elastic to keep the tyre lever in place, so any bumps during the climb wouldn't knock it out. Everyone made it to the top of the mountain thanks to this little bit of engineering.
Well, fair play for getting it fixed so that everyone made it to the top of the mountain. My hesitation, Dan, is that whilst this is a roadside repair, there is, as we reported on Hack Forward slash Bodge before, a much neater, simpler solution, which is that you take your broken cable and then you put it through, like, the bit of...
Just the rear derailleur.
Thank you, Dan. Just a bit of rear derailleur. Cinch it tight. Jobs are good. Unless, of course, it's snapped in the shifter, which sometimes it can do. But, you know... I mean, I suppose then there is that caveat. We don't know. So it's got to be a hack.
It's definitely got to be a hack for me.
Really?
To the end of that ride on the mountain, I mean, didn't have any zip ties either.
That is good. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that is very true. All right, Sam, well done. That's got us off to a good start. Alex Lark sent this one in. My left shifter came loose during a virtual race, in brackets, 45 kilometres, and the front gear would automatically drop to the smaller chainring unless it was being held manually. Luckily, after a 400-metre climb halfway through the race, my support crew, whoever that is, fixed it with improvised kitchen tool set. I even managed to produce a solid sprint finish in the end. So that is a zip tie.
Yep.
And a plastic fork. A plastic knife, rather. Or is that some sticky tape as well?
I don't know if it's plastic, is it? There's some sellotape.
Oh, no, I can see the reflection. Hello, Alex. I mean, that's technically a roadside bodge, isn't it, really? Roadside hack.
It's not roadside, though, is it?
Well, I mean, but it kind of is. It's a virtual roadside.
A virtual roadside hack.
Yeah, I like that.
Doesn't strike me as the best bike to do a sprint on at the end of a race.
Doesn't really, does it? No.
Apart from that, again, a hack that got you through. So long as that knife is not still zip-tied in place now, that's fine.
Yeah, what I can't think is that why didn't your support crew just bring you an Allen key? Because if your left shifter came loose, could you not just tighten it back up again?
Mm. Or just replace the bike and give you a push.
Good point. Yeah. Right, okay, next.
Next one from Chris D'Entremont. I was getting frustrated with tubes always unravelling my pocket in my seat bag, so I wrapped them in cling film to keep them nice and neat.
This is genius. That does look nice and neat. I like that. I don't think I've seen that before.
No. Isaac, behind the camera, says that he uses cling film on his inner tubes. He's never told us this before. Thought it was common sense. The amount of times I have rewrapped my inner tube pre-ride before I put it in my pocket and thought to myself, I should do something that makes this a bit less time-consuming for every ride.
I use electrical tape.
Do you?
Yeah. But this looks neater.
It does look neater, yeah.
Yeah, cool. That's a hack, definitely. Knock yourselves out and... copy that one for sure. Adam Jones sent this one in. Now summer has set in. What better way to recover than with an ice lolly, which helps you to recover? Frozen gel, which can also be taken on a ride to keep you cool. It's a weird looking gel, that one, isn't it?
Well, I've never seen a frozen gel before.
Maybe they all go sort of milky. Good idea, though.
Yeah, not great if you've got sensitive teeth.
No, nor is it very good for recovery, because it's just carbs, obviously.
Well, I think the idea is you put it in your back pocket and it keeps you cool at the start of the ride, then you eat it during the ride. No?
Well, that was part of it, but you also said, what better way to help you recover?
Oh, I see.
I think I'd just rather have an ice lolly at the end. But yeah, to take with you mid-ride, I think that's cool. Or maybe for a virtual race, that'd be pretty useful, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Keep cool. I might reserve judgment until I try freezing a gel and seeing what it tastes like.
We should go for it. Yeah, I think you should try that.
Shall we report back next week?
Yeah, all right.
I'll set a reminder.
Yeah, okay.
Right, finally this week, Max Jossie. In a pottery class at school, I was assigned to incorporate a non-ceramic object into a functional piece. While digging through a box of broken slash old bike parts, I found an old rim brake lever that seemed like a perfect handle. I threw the mug body on the wheel and measured the lever and designed an attachment, accounting for clay shrinkage. Taking two bolts and with the help of a Dremel and epoxy, it was firmly attached. The result? a perfect mug for after-ride beverages.
Can I just say, this looks wicked.
It does look amazing, yeah.
This is like proper pro.
Even the photograph of it looks professionally done, doesn't it?
Yeah! That is amazing. 100% hack, that. Brilliant.
I'm starting to worry that people are just going on to AI and saying, design me a pottery cup with a handle that's a brake lever. It looks like an AI shot. It's that well done, doesn't it?
Yeah, but all of the blurb that Max has written makes it seem like they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, do you know, a little known fact, a former teammate of mine got through to the final of the Great British Pottery Throwdown, Showdown. Yeah.
And lost.
Matt Cronshaw. Did he win? I can't remember. Anyway, I watched the Great Pottery Throwdown, or Showdown, whatever it's called, religiously to see how he got on.
The Great Pottery Throwdown sounds more like a Greek programme.
Isn't that what you do? You throw pottery?
Plates in Greece, don't you?
No, as in that's what you do on a wheel. See. You throw pottery, don't you?
Oh, I don't know. I've got no idea.
Maybe should have Googled that. Anyway, spontaneous, but yeah.
I mean, the stories this week are off the charts. Right. That brings us to an end of Hacker Bods this week. Make sure you send some more in for next week's show.
Particularly pottery,
yeah,
please.
Throw them down.
It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comments section down below that relates to a photo that we'll give you in just 1 second after the results.
This is the photo from last week, which is Ineos Grenadiers Tamon Arensman. Sat down against the barriers after winning his second Tour de France mountain summit finish. Our winner this week is Elwit Rock One, who put, I thought I was between a rock and a hard place during my sprint. Turns out it was just my back against the wall.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It wasn't a lull, but it was pretty good. So,
internal laugh.
Yeah. That's clever.
Yeah.
All right. Well done, Elwit Rock One. Get in touch and we will get your GCN Camelback water bottle out to you. This week's photo, Dan, it's a good one of Pauline Ferrand-Prevot.
Yeah, this is just after she crossed the line to take her second consecutive stage win on the final day of the Tour de France Famalay Zwift. I'll get you started. Ferrand-Prevot's Tour de France ambitions go sideways.
Yeah, I mean, they have, haven't they, there? So we see, Dan.
There's a picture going both ways.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, she put a lot of effort into the last part of the race, didn't she?
She did indeed, yeah. I thought she spent most of the race on the Aero Cervelo, but that's the
lightweight,
isn't
it? Until last weekend, apparently.
Oh, she rode it on the Madeleine as well.
I think Alex and Ollie might be discussing this on this week's GCN Tech Show.
Ah, I will duly tune in then. Interesting.
Right, put your captions in the comments section down below and we'll pick a winner this time next week.
You know what? I think Pauline Ferrand-Prevot can rock long socks. I think she looks good in those.
Yeah, they did look quite cool, didn't they?
Yeah. Another interesting little anecdote.
Maybe she thought the S5 was a bit too dangerous. Sort of speed she's getting. We will shortly let you know what's coming up on GCN this week, but as ever, we're going to read out a few of our favourite comments from the last week's worth of videos. So many comments underneath last week's GCN show.
I feel like you and Connor touched a nerve, Dan, with that one.
Yeah, we were talking about declining viewing figures at the most recent men's Tour de France. Like I said, lots of comments. Picked out a couple. The ASMR cyclists, but too many big companies trying to make a profit by restricting access and charging high cost of view. Interest in the tour hasn't changed, but the barriers to following it have increased.
Country by country, isn't it?
Yeah, it varies massively, yeah, country to country.
A lot of the countries that you said have declined have still got free to view.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really work, does it? But yeah, certainly in some places, for sure. Naru Tadeo said, here in the US, the race wasn't broadcast on a public network. Oh, there we go. You have to have a subscription to a rather niche channel. I imagine that for a lot of us, we could only follow the race via highlights on YouTube.
I think a lot of people are doing that. And the highlights are getting better, even the short form ones that ASO, the organiser themselves, put out.
Yeah.
Include like the post-race interviews, some scenery from the start, etc. Which I think feels like enough for a lot of people at this point.
Yeah.
Solar System 50 put, I blame that awful Jonas Vingegaard era helmet. That made me want to change the channel when I saw it first.
That's why the UCI are going to ban them. So, yeah, there you go. And then Shatner Bassoon said, we never knew how good we had it with GCN+. I think we did know how good we had it with GCN+.
We did, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everyone did. But anyway, hey, there we go. Didn't you say that, was it 7-point-something million people tuned in France to watch Pauline?
On the television station France 2. Yeah, 7.7 million maximum viewers on the ninth and final stage on Sunday, which is pretty impressive.
That is pretty cool, isn't it? What an
amazing
showcase.
Average of over 4 million throughout the stage.
Yeah.
Underneath the cycling adventure we can all have, which was a lovely short video that Si put out last week, the real Garage Lee, should I say. Truly one of the most beautiful cycling shorts I've seen in years. Simple, accessible and beautiful. Well done, mate.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I didn't really do very much, but I can get up early.
Bert Bike Blah put, that was lovely, but if Si doesn't have enough adventures, heaven help the rest of us.
Yeah, I read that and I did reply to Bert Bike Blah because it is a fair point. Mm. But, I mean, you can even if you go and do adventures, you can still feel like, you know, you're stuck in a little bit of a rut, aren't you?
I almost was inspired enough to go out. I thought it'd be nice to take my younger son, Julius, 14, out for sunrise one morning. And I didn't.
I'll give you a pro tip, Dan. If you wait a couple of months, then it's sunrise becomes a little bit later.
I looked at the time and thought, it's about half an hour to get to that place. That'd be really good. That means leaving at 4:30.
Yeah. No, that's a bit punchy. And then Kai Dean said, I'm only 2 minutes into this video and I'm already inspired. There is nothing quite like going out on your bike uber early in the morning. Yeah, Dan. It's the best. I think I'm going to do exactly this tomorrow morning. So I hope you did and I hope you had a very nice time as well.
A lot of comments along the same lines on that video. Meanwhile, under Andrew Feather takes on the Outdoor Strava KOM, at Hebs put, nothing's ever felt as useless as Andrew Feather's seat and seat post. It is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I was watching that video, I think, I don't know anybody, pro, amateur, otherwise, who spends such little time sat down.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? Yeah. Apparently, according to Ollie, that's part of the reason why he struggled with SRAM mechanical gears, because he can't ever unweight to change gear.
Yeah.
So he's just constantly moshing on the pedals. User error then, basically. Lucy Diamond Boxer said, 1301, all I'm saying, is it a coincidence that Sepp Kuss loves cheese and was spotted at a local beauty salon spending 3 hours in prosthetic makeup and was wearing a blue T-shirt and pink shorts? Sabotage. Yeah.
For context, Sepp Kuss is the Strava KOM holder at the moment. That's the person that Andrew Feather was trying to beat. And they came up against a few obstacles, including a cheese market towards the top, didn't they? Well worth watching that video if you haven't done so already.
It's a bit like signing me out of Mario Kart, isn't it?
Yeah. Man from Montreal put, why not find a bike shop and get a stock chainry?
I mean, they did actually do that, didn't they? But it did not help. And then, as mentioned, Andrew couldn't get his head around mechanical SRAM shifting from 20, whatever it was, 2014, 15, something like that.
Yeah.
Bikes weren't dangerous back then, see, Dan?
Nope. Then finally, underneath Mountain Biker versus Roadie, which came out on Sunday, Joe FQ60Z put, so Alex was meant to shepherd a newbie through his first crit and instead dropped him and then attacked as he was being spat out the back. Amazing stuff.
I mean, Joe, in a nutshell, yes, yeah, that's exactly basically what happened. Yeah. And then Si from the block, Old Dog 1965 said, I'd love to see a GCN GMBN collab at a gravel race. Gravel being the no man's land between disciplines. I hate to say it, Si from the block, Old Dog 1965, but... Well, actually, no, there is a new GMBN presenter who might actually trouble some GCN presenters. Well, yeah, new cross-country rider, James. But otherwise, I think most mountain bikers don't really do all that much pedalling these days. I mean, I don't want to judge, but I'm judging.
I think we've insulted quite a few people over the course of the last half an hour or so.
We have indeed, yes.
Yeah,
we'll
keep at it.
Colin, you prove me wrong, mountain bikers. Show me someone that's not a cross-country racer that would give a roadie a challenge at a gravel race.
Right, coming up on the channel this week, starting on Thursday, we are going to show you how not to get dropped on a group ride. This aimed at more cyclists that are just getting into the sport, basically, that are looking to try and keep up with their groups they keep getting dropped from. There's quite a few tricks of the trade that you can learn, isn't there?
Old dog, lots of tricks. Yeah. And then on Saturday, frankly, I think it's going to be my last ridiculously long, hard challenge. I tried to ride 290k gravel route here in the UK and get the FKT. And it's a bit of a theme these days, but... basically broke me. So anyway, see how I got on and whether I managed it.
The attempt was about 10 days ago, and Si has not ridden a bike since, have you?
Well, I did take quite a big chunk of time off, but I got back on it now.
What you probably need is a break for about a decade.
Yeah. And then when I come back, I'll find that I'm even faster than I was before. So much so, I'm really scared.
Yeah. And then on Sunday, some science from Connor, should I say. Has the science of cadence changed? Really cool video, spoken to some people who've done studies on the subject. I think we speak so much about cadence that you don't think you can learn anything more. But I've watched that video already and I could.
Really?
There we go. Yeah.
Fortunately, yeah, it's not science from Connor. It's Connor's reported on actual science. But anyway, I can't wait to see that one because that is super interesting. Like you, I kind of figured I know it all about cadence.
I just know it all.
Good point. On that note, should we leave it there?
Yeah, let's leave it there. Thanks for watching. See you next week.
See ya.